Hello, everyone, and welcome to our first episode of the year. So I think a happy new year is in order as well for everybody. And I hope you all enjoyed your holidays. We're going to kick off the show with a very interesting topic, which is access to capital for government contractors. I'd like to start out by introducing a couple of special guests we're really excited to have with us today. Ms. Krista Williams, she's the Vice President of Government Contracting, and she's the Business Intelligence Manager for Bank of America. And then we also have Mr. Isaac Ellsworth, and he's a Vice President with Republic Capital Access. So this topic is very timely because just a couple of months ago, actually earlier in the year, we had a student from Govology. They went through one of our training programs, came out of it, and within the first 8 months, they won their first government contract, and we were all like excited for her. Then that excitement really turned to a little bit of worry because, you know, she started realizing that she was not getting paid as quickly as she needed to sustain the employees that she was putting onto the contract. Then I was talking to our panelists here from the financial industry before we kicked everything off. And I said, I think most people look at this as an afterthought, but it really should be something that everybody is looking at from the beginning, starting to build some relationships like with Isaac and with Krista, understand the various capital and contracting or vehicles or factoring and all of this stuff. So this is what we're going to talk about today. So what I'd like to do is kind of introduce Isaac and Krista. Isaac, I'd like to start with you. And if you could just maybe tell me a little bit about what you guys do at Republic Capital Access. And Krista's going to tell us what they do because you guys work hand in hand. And so there's some programs that you guys offer that they don't have and vice versa. If somebody is looking for different types of funding, you can send them over to Krista. So can you talk a little bit about your company, what you guys do for government contractors, and how you guys work together with Bank of America and maybe some other lenders that can help contractors get access to the capital that they need?
Absolutely. And thanks so much for having me on, Carol and Michael. It's a really a pleasure to be here. And yes, Carol is right, everyone. Krista is not my enemy. I know we're both in financing, but a lot of times people think it's anyone who's in finance and they must be enemies, but we do work really well. Bank of America, one of our favorite banks to work with. And so, yes, my name is Isaac Ellsworth. I'm the VP of Sales at Republic Capital Access. We've been around since 2009, and we're the leading specialty finance firm for government contractors. So all of our clients are GovCons. We've funded over 1,200 contractors in that time, over 4,000 contracts. And what our main product provides is the working capital that GovCons need to cover payroll, to optimize performance on contracts, and have the healthy cash flow they need to grow. Because you're right, Carol. It is a blessing and a curse to win a contract. I'm sure a lot of you guys on this panel may agree with that, because you do win that contract, but the government expects you to have the finances in order to complete the contract. And because they pay in arrears, it's net 30 or net 45 or net 60, you may not have the capital in place to get from point A to point B. So to combat that very common pain point that a lot of GovCons face, our structure is built around your receivable, your invoice. That's going to be your strongest asset as a government contractor, your government receivable, because that's guaranteed assets that the government's going to pay you. So all RCA does is come in, provide the financing you need to get you to the day that you bill for the contract and the day that you receive the payment. So our structure is called AR financing or invoice financing, where we can take that invoice, advance up to 90% of the amount. And the reason why we work really well with banks is because our underwriting, I'll say, is less intensive, just because a lot of times you might not be bankable. And I'll let Krista allude to why you might not qualify quite yet, but you have the government contract as collateral. So we can talk to you, and that can serve as your strongest piece of collateral for RCA to fund. And we could just fund that contract for you. So whatever invoices you're generating from the contract, we can take that as collateral, advance upon those invoices, knowing that you're going to get paid back within the next 60 days. So it's a lot cleaner product, allowing smaller GovCons that are growing but need cash flow to cover payroll and to grow as well. So I'd love to go more into detail, but essentially all of our clients are GovCons. So we do know the pain points that you face, and we're looking forward to kind of spinning that out and seeing how it could be helpful for you guys in the near future.
Awesome. Hey, thank you. That's super helpful. One quick question for you related to that. How about subcontractors? So if they've got a big contract under a government contract, but they're not the prime, how does that work in terms of what you just explained?
That's a great question. So if you're a prime contractor, very easy because we're underwriting your account debtor, who is a government agency, so we know they're going to pay. Now, let's just say that if you're a subcontractor and your prime is Carol, Isaac, and Krista's fun IT company, well, we're about to underwrite that IT company and see if they're an approved account debtor, because we want to make sure that whoever you're subbing to has enough credit to pay you back. Like if you're subbing to a smaller prime and they're not large enough, we don't have the right type of credit risk involved, then we're not going to be comfortable funding that, because for whatever reason, they might say it's net 30, but they could say, hey, sorry, we're kind of in a tough cash position. We're not going to pay you back in the net payment terms agreed upon. So as long as it's a sub to, you know, a Booz Allen, a Leidos, Northrop Grumman, larger primes or approved primes that are in our system, typically with $100 million in revenue or above, that's when we're comfortable with working with them. So it's just kind of a case-by-case basis. And, you know, state contracts are fine as well. So if they're a prime contract to a state as well, that's something we could look at.
Awesome. Well, that's super great information. Let's go to Krista. And Krista, what I'd like is for you to basically talk about what you do there. And you've got a small team. You guys are looking to expand out on that team. But before I met you, I didn't even know that you guys had like a government contracting team, and not just really to go after government contracts, but all small businesses and general businesses call you up and they're looking for some things in government contracting. You guys also have a lot of resources in place to send them to. So could you talk a little bit about the resources that you guys have, how folks might be able to have some access to capital through Bank of America? But I also like to ask you this, because I've heard all the times I was coming up as an entrepreneur, you know, have a relationship with your banker. Michael and I talk about relationships all the time. But sometimes I wonder, how do you really develop a relationship? Do you go into the local branch and say, hey, I'm here to develop a relationship? I think the key is that when folks can understand and know people like you guys, I mean, that's a relationship and they're there when you need them. And I think for us, that's where our relationships help us out, because I might not need a proposal writer right now, or I might not need an accountant right now that can help me. But when I need them, I know who they are and I know where I can go to, right? So what are your thoughts and perspectives on all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a multi-part question. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. And getting to present with Isaac is great. I always enjoy working with RCA and what they do. But my team at Bank of America is a government contracting team. So we operate as boutique consulting firm is kind of some of the ways that we describe ourselves. We're folks that are immensely immersed in the industry. And so we are only going to talk about industry discussions with our clients. They are commercial businesses generally generating revenue of over $5 million. So that's a great opportunity for your relationship question that you had. But we complement and are an extension of the overall banking relationship. Talk about the banking, we can talk about the deposit accounts, the lines of credit, but we're going to offer our traditional banking services. But where we come in and specialize is you may sit anywhere in the country and have your primary banker. That's going to be more of a general industries individual. So they may not fully understand all of those pain points that you're going to have as a government contractor, as you are trying to go and win that next contract, or you've been paying cash for everything. And now it's, well, I really want to get to that next level of contracting. Is there a particular opportunity that you're looking at? Is there an agency you're really trying to get into? Do you need some of those additional resources like proposal writers or other consultants that can come in and really help amp up what you're doing to make that presentation and make that pitch work? So what we've been able to do is over the years that we've been involved in this industry, we've been able to really develop and hone those relationships with those individuals. So being able to say, well, we do know proposal writers. We do know other resources for financing. We do know folks at SOCOM, for example, and can help make that just simple introduction. It's just that warm connection that says, hey, this guy is looking to reach out to this company or this agency. It's a really great opportunity for us. Across the entire firm at Bank of America, we are really excited that we can bank 82 of the top 100 government contractors. So we have a really great relationship throughout the entire industry, from smalls to the large primes, to all of the companies that really support the overall industry and the overall mission of what they're doing. And being able to support that, it's not that we're just providing all the financing out to the large primes of, you know, your Raytheons and your Northrops. We're able to actually inject that capital into the small business community that's here. And I love being able to work with them, because sometimes they just want to operate and they need to get that resource of that, like maybe that one connection that they need to just help jumpstart everything that they're going through. So for us, as far as the relationship question you had asked about, for us, we just start the conversations. We just kind of come up with a discussion point. We meet each other. We understand each other's capabilities, how we can partner together with each other and see if there is an immediate need for the discussion. You brought up a really great point earlier. Someone that they're excited, they've won their first contract, they're ready to go. And then it's, oh, wait, what do I do? How do I get the financing? And so that's where we've been able to leverage the industry itself. And we're at an event next month at the National 8A Small Business Conference. I'm actually presenting with a proposal writing company. So that way we can talk about it. Maybe when you're proposing your contracts, you think about the financing. What information are you going to need to really make sure that you get off on the right foot and really succeed at winning and not just winning the contract, but executing the contract as well?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so important because you don't want your first contract to be your last. I mean, and I've seen it a number of times. The stories that had the most irony in it is that I actually worked with a client who was an angel investor, and he was also a government contractor. He got this one contract for $500,000, but he was so leveraged out in his angel investments, he didn't even have the money to basically fulfill his contract and to meet the suppliers to pay them out what they needed. So I just felt like that was so ironic. But anyway, Michael, you've been quiet down there. I'd like to get you involved in the conversation here, because what I'd like to do here today, one of the intentions is that I just really would like to kind of present and put out there all kinds of different ways. And sometimes when you're not bankable, you also have to kind of get a little bit creative. So I wanted to have folks that are watching this show today come out and be able to come away with some thoughts about what are some things that I could do if I'm not quite yet bankable, or what are some things I could do if I've got the contract, which Isaac presented as the factoring is one of the things. If you've gotten the contract in hand, that kind of will guarantee that you can get some funding when you're not bankable. But Michael, what are your thoughts? And just kind of overall, I know you work with a lot of clients, and I'm sure you have some stories that you could share as well. But if you want to share some thoughts and stories and then some ideas on maybe some creative ways that people can look to finance some of their contracts.
Yeah, money is an interesting topic. And I'll steal a line from my partner, Josh, here. He always says, it's not about the money, it's about the money. Like you've probably heard that 100 times. At the end of the day, you've got to have money to do things. And so what I typically see with who we work with, and we work with companies that are startups to multi-billion dollar companies. And what I see on the front end is this progression where, you know, you start off and you're a one person company, and then you're trying to figure out, how do I get a second employee and a third employee and do different things. And the companies that I see that have the biggest challenges are the ones that try to leapfrog without all of these puzzle pieces in place. They try to go from a one person to a 15 person company, and they don't have any of this stuff in place. You know, they don't know a banker or anything like that. And they don't realize the time it takes to on ramp and get paid. And you think about a contract where you are putting people in slots or butts in seats, however you want to refer to it. When you're doing that, you've got to hire those people and pay those people before you get paid from the government. It could be 30 days. It could be 60 days. It could be 90 days, depending on how you have to do it. So it's one thing to try and stretch your checking account for 2 employees. It's a whole different ballgame to do 15 or 20 or whatever the thing is. And so that's where, like, initially when people are starting off, I'm really focused on, you need to get bankable, right? You need to get in a position where the bank is comfortable loaning you money, or whatever company it is, whether it's Isaac or somebody else, because they can't just give this money to you because you want a contract. There's a lot more. And I do think a lot of people think, well, I've got the contract. It's the government. They're going to pay. And they're like, yeah, but you don't have a track record. That's the whole thing. It's like, it's not about your client's track record. This is about you. And that's, again, where people, they don't think about that. And they just think, well, I've got this contract. It's a $1 million contract. Why can't you do it? Like, well, we don't know that we can trust you. And that's the big thing. So if you start slow and do it properly through your growth, I always advise people, when you're initially getting into business, focus on contracts you can self-perform in that first 6-12 months. Self-perform, put some cash away. You know, you can handle, juggling your own paycheck and things like that. But if you're really small, that's a great place to start, is self-performing. And it really depends on what you do. But I've got people in the program management and project management space. They're earning $250, $275 an hour for some of those services. You can bank some cash. And then even if you just have a little bit of cash and can show that, it really spirals quickly into, now I've got $30, $50, $100,000 in the bank. And now I'm much more attractive, much more bankable. Now I can add that second, that third employee and get to that point. Because what you will see is there's like different levels of bankability, right? So you could all of a sudden go from cash poor to now you've got cash in the bank. Now you just want a few more contracts and now you don't have cash, right? Kind of can go up and down for you. And so you could be a $1 million company and not be bankable, or like the $4 million one that you were talking about, Carol, where he didn't have any money because it was all stretched out doing different things. And so I think money management in general is probably one of the weakest areas for business owners. I don't care if they're $1 million or $50 million. Typically, when I sit down and start asking finance questions, I get the deer in the headlights look. If you're an owner of a business and you're on here, and this is where I'm going to be a little tough on you, you have no excuse to be ignorant about your finances. Because if I sit down as the banker, as the lender, as Isaac, whoever it is, and you can't answer basic questions, you have failed the sniff test initially on becoming bankable with me. And that happens all the time where I start asking questions. I'm like, tell me a little bit about, what's your payroll? What's your expenses for the month? What's your income? And they're like, I'll have to get back to you. Let me check with my accountant. Like, why do you have to check with your account? You can't run a report in your business. So getting financially smart, even a little bit, will make you keep using the word bankable. But when you can have that conversation, even a low level, with folks like Krista and Isaac, to explain your finances, explain what's going on in the business, it's just a different tone. So I don't know if anybody here has watched Shark Tank, but when you get on Shark Tank, there's probably about 5 or 6 questions they go on. And after those 5 or 6, but like, what's your cost to acquire a customer? They always ask that. What's your revenue last year? What's your projected revenue? How did you get to these numbers? How did you get to your valuation? And depending on how those people answer those questions determines whether somebody in those seats says, I'm out. I'm so far out. Like, you are so clueless. I'm out. I don't know that Krista ever has the ability to go, man, you're so clueless, I'm out. But she might be thinking it in the back of her head, they're so clueless, I'm out. So that's why I think there's a handful of things you can get smart on financially really quickly when it comes to your profit loss statement, your balance sheet, all those kind of things. So you can answer those questions. And that helps, because even if you have money on the books, if you appear clueless, like, I'm just not touching it. Because if I give you money, what are you going to do with the money? That's what they're all thinking at the end of the day, right? So I can get on that soapbox all day long, but I'll just stop there, Carol.
I got to tell you, Michael, you just gave me an idea for something that I might have to invite Isaac and Krista back for. Wouldn't it be cool if there was a Shark Tank where we like had Krista and Isaac and a couple of other folks, and we would have some businesses come in there and make a pitch for some capital, and they basically would tell you whether they're in or they're out. So.
Oh, my.
I'm too nice, Carol. I'll say yes to everyone.
Well, hey, they're going to like you then.
I will play the role, like, but somewhere between Mark Cuban and Mr. Wonderful on that one.
I was going to ask who's going to be Mr. Wonderful in that scenario. Yeah.
Right.
I would say I probably got the hair for it. Yeah. So I can go somewhere in between there, in between that and Mark Cuban. So,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
But to Mike's point, I do appreciate you sharing that, Mike, because you're 100% right. Like, a lot of times, that's the last thought. It's an afterthought. Getting your financing in order, knowing what you're projected, and just knowing where your company is going and where you're going after, because you're winning these contracts, you're going after contracts, and you're working with the most risk-averse customer in the world, the U.S. government. And once you're awarded this contract, they expect you to perform on it and not be complaining as you go, so, oh, I didn't know I was going to have to float 90 days. To cover payroll. I didn't know I was going to perform this task order with under my own funding. And it's like all these questions come up after you're being awarded. And so for us, to Chris's point, we love talking to these companies first, say, hey guys, like, this is what is going to be expected from you when you win this contract. And that's why to get your financing in place before it happens, before your hair is on fire, is really essential. And that's where we come in, educating them, like, this is how you can get from point A to point B. This is how we can help you cover your payroll pre-invoice and help you cover your payroll in the interim as well, so you can actually maximize performance. And like to Carol's point, make sure it's not the last contract you get awarded, because it's right. We've seen that happen a lot. You get blacklisted. If you don't perform one contract, it can go south really bad. And then that agency will no longer want to look at your company again for more work. So it is a slippery slope. But if you handle it at the beginning of a lot of these procurement stages, it can help save a lot of pain on the back end.
Okay. And to your point, this is a small market, even though financially it's a big market.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Like, we got on here, you and I had never talked before, Isaac. And you're like,
I'm shocked,
you knew my partner, but you knew of me. And so it's such a small market where a lot of people know a lot of people, and they may not recognize your company off at first, but then they make, oh, that was the company that Bob worked with that told they didn't have their financing and they couldn't perform. Yeah, we're not touching that. You know, the word gets around fast.
It does.
Yeah.
For
you won't even get a subcontract.
For a big industry, it's a small world after all, is what I would say.
It is.
That's my Florida roots coming in. But I think you guys really, I mean, bring up a really good point. And something that we often stress with a lot of our clients is that when, obviously, we love to, you know, we're excited with them when they win a contract. And then when we're kind of, you know, the hair on fire scenario, we'll work as much as we can. But we do love it when we talk to folks that are in the bid process. I mean, we're writing financial feasibility letters when necessary and to help support what they actively have right now. But what we also tell them is that by having that relationship and by having kind of those forward thinking conversations with us, it allows us to not be behind the eight ball, that when they do win that big contract or something lands in their lap that they need to double a line of credit was just coming out of nowhere. We have the relationship, the longevity. We know the business. We know the business owners. We know that they know their numbers. Mike, I've heard you say that on your podcast for years. My colleague is, he was in the Army. So his comment is, you know, give us as many bullets as you can and we're going to shoot them out, you know, and so we're going to take as much information as we can. So give us all those details, give us the numbers, show us your projections where you're going to really need that cash. Know when you are going to need, how much you're going to need. Don't just think, well, I think we're going to need about, you know, this amount. Really know that information. And by having all of that concrete, having all that information ready and on hand is what helps us move this process along. Because if you can explain things that just maybe look like an anomaly in your financials, we can speak to that. Because to your point, it's not necessarily about who the contract is with. That's fantastic that you've got a Navy or a Marine contract. You as a business, what's your past performance? We need to still get to know you as the business owner. Okay. How is this all going to work? So you bring up really great points.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I didn't touch on earlier that I think is super important for people to understand is this guy was on one of my podcasts a while back, and he had grown his company from 2 or 3 million to about 150 million. In the span of a handful of years. I'll never forget this quote. He said, Mike, growth consumes cash. Like, growth consumes cash. And he's like nothing you can imagine. So when you're in growth mode, which a lot of people on here, you're in growth mode, maybe even hyper growth mode. When you're in growth mode, it just consumes cash in all kind of ways. And there are things that are not directly billable to the government. Think about that. If you're growing and all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, we had one HR person and now we need two. Oh, we're growing and now, you know, we need to redo our website because of it's just not relevant anymore. Hey, we need to do some brochures. We need to create a booth to go to trade shows, or we need to hire, or we need to buy new computers for 15 new people. There's often things, even office space, all those kind of things. There's often things that aren't directly billable to the government, but it needs cash and it needs it quickly if you're going to grow. And so sometimes, again, we think, oh, you know, the contract's $1 million. My costs are 800,000. I got 200 left over. Woohoo. But then, you know, okay, there's taxes and then there's growth, you know, so putting aside those kind of things. So looking beyond the one contract is also very important. That's one of the reasons where it could be a one and done or a two or three and done. If you're not thinking about, okay, well, over the next 5 years, 10 years, like, where are we going? What are we trying to build? And how much of this cash do I have to put aside? Like, every single quarter in my company, we do distributions. And when I sit down and do the distributions, whatever that number is, there's a portion of that, this giant chunk of cash out of the distribution that goes into what we're trying to build. Like, I don't even know the things on our roadmap quite yet, but I know we're going to invest. And because I know I'm going to invest, I'm putting money aside for new cameras, new microphones, another staff member to do editing or whatever it may be. I'm putting that money aside because I know it's coming. And that's where you've got to be thinking about the future, not just this contract that you just won and, oh, hey, my hair's on fire. It's like there's the next contract and the next contract and the next contract. So let's position for that. I am not a government story, but I had this one client of mine that when I sat down with them years ago in their business, I said, tell me your biggest three challenges. And one of their biggest challenges was their downtime was the summer. And every summer at the end of the summer, they had like this $35,000 Amex bill that they had to pay off. And I was like, okay, so if you know that every single year, like, why aren't you just budgeting that every month? Divide that by 8 or 10 and just put that money aside. And that was such a huge light bulb moment. They like, I never thought of that, because they were like, we run up this giant bill and then we're working hard to pay it off in the winter. And I'm like, well, why don't you just pay or just put the money aside all throughout the year? And it, the first year we came around to the summer, I got to the end of summer. I was like, what's your Amex bill? And they were like, zero.
Wow.
You're so consumed in the business. You're not thinking of little bitty things like that. And that was something that was, I mean, it was very difficult for them to operate with that giant bill looming over their head for, they've been doing that for 20 years. So you got to be thinking about the future a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely, man. Those are great points. And yeah, I had a couple of thoughts that I wanted to also just throw in there, because we were talking back about trying to get creative as a small business. We work with a lot of small businesses. You know, that's really where our biggest passion lies in the small business world. And when you think about, like, what's your first access to capital that you're able to get through, you know, well, you know, sometimes it's friends and family, right? And then the next thing you're looking at is like, okay, how much do I have to put on my credit card? You know, right? Then after that, you might consider things like a line of credit. That's usually something that you can get established a little bit earlier. I'll ask maybe Krista, you could maybe go into that a little bit. But the other thing I wanted to make mention of, and a couple of things here as we're thinking about it, you know, one is like, as you're going through there and you're trying to get financing and you're looking at your contract, not just the contract, but the solicitation. There's a lot to understand about what is in a solicitation. And there's things, and Michael mentioned what is not allowed. You know, sometimes they won't allow you to recoup it inside of the contract, but sometimes there are things that are allowed to be recouped. But not only that, you should be understanding what is allowable to be recouped. And we also have some training on that in Gabology, but you should also understand from your solicitation, look beyond the line items. The line items are typically the things like, here's the scope of work, give us a price. There are also other things that will cost you money. Like if you have to get ready to be cybersecurity compliant, right? CMMC is a big thing now. They want you in some kind of thing to do some type of audited financials or anything like that. These are all things that's very expensive. It's not a line item, but it will cost you. And you need to understand whether that is allowable to be recuperated so that, number one, you've got a financial understanding of like what you're going to be on the hook for when you start performing the contract financially, but you also are able to make those commitments financially that you can. So that was just kind of a thought that I wanted to share. The other thought that I wanted to share was like one thing that some people have been successful at doing, let's say you're providing a manufactured product, or maybe sometimes you can work with those manufacturers to say, hey, you know what? I know your standard terms are like 30 days for us to pay you, but we really don't have a lot of capital. We think that there's a great opportunity for us to get this. And as you develop a relationship, we keep talking about relationships, but the more you have a relationship with people that know you, like you, and trust you, they may actually basically give you more favorable terms so that you could maybe say, hey, can you give me 60 or 90 day terms to pay you back? Or you could even ask for, would you be willing to be a partner in this with us and just allow us to pay you when we get paid from the government? And so that could also help in some regards. So those are just a few creative ways that you might consider. But I wanted to go back to Krista, and I know we've got a lot of questions in the queue, so we'll go to those pretty shortly. But Krista, as a Bank of America customer, if somebody was coming in, would, like, I know you mentioned something about for companies like over 5 million, but, you know, for small businesses, what are some of those traditional kinds of things that maybe they could get access to a little bit earlier on as a small business?
Yeah, I think those are really good questions. There's the conversation about, you know, have you looked at just a small business credit card? Is that an option? You do have the lines of credit. I think that a lot of the questions that we often get sometimes have been specific to their actual finances. So it was a question or their financial statements. They were never able to show that they had the appropriate amount of receivables because they were paid mm-hmm. within the same month. So going from the 1st to the 30th, they showed that they didn't have any receivable. But if they changed it and said the reporting dates went from the 15th to the 15th, it actually showcased it. So it was a way for them to be able to just kind of not necessarily manipulate their reporting, but it helped illustrate that they did have receivables, they were getting those fundings, and it just kind of changed the conversation a little bit. So I think that with those, what we do is really just help advocate where we can and support. And again, it goes back to the company. Where are they? What's the growth plan? What's the trajectory? Where are we within the company? And is it something that we know that we're going to be able to get to? Can we get to that? Yes, knowing that we need the financials, we need all of the backlog. We want to look at everything and see where the company is going, because that really helps set the tone of the discussion. And then that's when we can quickly evaluate and say, okay, you know what, this may be a not now, but we know that. And then I bring in Isaac to the conversation and say, hey, in the meantime, I may not be able to get there on this type of financing, but let me get Isaac on the phone or get him involved. He can facilitate that. And then maybe we can support every other, you know, aspect of the banking relationship with everything else. So it's been a really great partnership for us just to kind of help companies wherever they're at. But every story, every situation is unique. And so we really try and customize something that's going to be appropriate for them and where they're at and where they're going.
Yeah. To Chris's point, I really appreciate it, Chris. It's been great working with Bank America as well, because relationships over transactions, that's our motto at Republic Capital Access. And, you know, we really take that to heart, because a lot of times as a small business, it can be discouraging if you're going after a bank line of credit and you don't qualify, you know, but you have X amount of reasons why you think you should. But to then know someone else in the space, you know, like our company that, you know, can provide the financing in the interim time to get you to that bank line of credit can add a lot of confidence and security. Like, so Krista in the past have had me on the call, emailed me saying, hey, Isaac, I really like this company. They're not quite bankable. Maybe in the next 6 months or a year, we can provide that line of credit, but they're going to work perfectly in your model, because all you guys are doing is financing their current contracts, their current AR. So we're going to give them to you guys. We have no long-term contract or termination fees, so you're never tied to work with us. And we're just simply an avenue for you to utilize to get to the bank line of credit. Because trust me, I know, guys, like, that's the goal. Bank of America is the goal. No one wants to be with Isaac too long. I get it. We love getting companies where they need to be. And a lot of times it does take like a two-part solution. Like, this is what RCA is going to do for the next year or so to get you to that bank line of credit. It's going to help build your personal credit, your business credit, build the cash flow you need so you are confident. And Krista brought up a really good golden nugget that you kind of glossed over there, Krista. I think you might need to highlight more about the financial feasibility letters that you apply to contracts. I think that'd be really good to illustrate and how we both help in that regard when it comes to financial capability letters on the RFPs.
Sure. I mean, for us, how I think you and I partner pretty well is that when we've got a client with a particular credit limit, or we know that we've already got that approved financing, we can go ahead and write those letters and we get them very specific to the solicitation. So we've got them and we'll send them directly to the contract officer. We'll send them right back to the company that's requesting it, but we'll sign those and we'll indicate that based on the award of the contract, we'd be able to continue and increase as needed. But then if it's something that we don't have already an approval for, we could say, hey, this is where we bring Isaac again into the conversation. And so he can help facilitate that with us when we may not be at that point yet, but we do have some other options. So, you know, with all that to say, and I think Isaac, you said it as well, is that what we do is make sure that within our network, we're trying to overall support, not only foster the relationships that we have, but for us, it's all about the mission and wanting to make sure that we're helping support the business, support the industry, and making sure that the job gets done. And in doing that, that's where a lot of these relationships and partnerships come in play.
Yeah. And Carol and Michael, I'll tell you this, like, if the least I could do is just supply financial commitment letters for your students here, like, that would be a win for me, because that's what really helps give them the confidence. So to Chris's point, a lot of times on RFPs, they're requiring to see some financial capability for your company, and you may not have the capital now, but since we're, it's non-binding and it's totally contingent upon if you are awarded the contract, Republic Capital Access, as a DoD trusted capital provider, we're able to just write the letter for whatever amount you need to apply on the RFP. And if you win, great. You know, we would love to finance you. But if not, it was just a free letter that we're providing just to give you the opportunity to even go after the bid. Because a lot of times you may see an RFP, you're like, man, we can't even show that we have 500K or a million in the bank, but we can just write you that letter. The government sees that we're a FAR compliant finance firm, and then you are allowed to move on to the next steps there. So more than happy to talk more about that. I think that's a product I'm really proud to offer because it's free. You don't have to be a client of ours. You can be a prospect, and we can just write you the letter. And good luck. We'd love to talk to you if you win, but if not, at least we help give you the confidence to go after it in the first place.
I have a question for Isaac, if I could jump in real quick, just because he just mentioned it. We have heard so much over the last few years about predatory lenders. And there's also people get online and start Googling and find weird stuff. And next thing they're talking to somebody and they're like, how do I vet this person? And, you know, then they get in trouble because they're going with the wrong person. But you mentioned about being approved. Can you talk a little bit about what type of certifications or approvals that you have with your company that give people confidence to work with you?
Mike, you brought up a great question. And what I do say, I say, you know, talk to Carol, Krista, and Mike Lejeune. They'll defend me. They'll back me. That's a great question because Bank of America and other bankers, they're in the banking section. Like they're in the federal regulated department, but I'm in the non-bank department. So there's a lot of, like you said, players out there that are really just looking to squeeze as much profit as they can against companies. You know, there's asset-based lenders out there with high interest rates, long-term termination fees, long-term contracts, and like, oh, you name it, all these type of fees built in. And they make you think, Michael, that that's your only option as a small business. Like, this is all you qualify for. You're not going to qualify anywhere else. You have to take this MCA loan. You have to go with this asset-based lender. And a lot of times it is just because someone Googled government contract financing. What do I qualify for? And it might be the first thing up on Google. But for us, we took a lot of research and how do we become a vetted resource for a lot of these GovCons? And the first answer, yes, being a DoD trusted capital provider. It's huge. We went through that program to be vetted by the DoD to be a trusted capital provider. So like we have that emblem, we have the logo stating like how we went through the course and we're vetted by the DoD. So that gives a lot of people confidence as well. But I would say, Michael, what really sets us apart from other, and here's a little joke, but factoring has a negative connotation. So you realize how I don't try to say factoring a lot. It's like the F word in the market. You can't say the F word, you know? It's like, oh, Isaac, are you guys like one of those factoring companies? Like, ah, that kind of hurts. But no, it's we are a variation of factoring, but because we do true sale purchasing of the invoice and we do an assignment of claims, that's what sets us apart. Mm-hmm. An assignment of claims is in the FAR, and it's a procedure allowing us to purchase the invoice, finance that invoice, and get paid by their account debtor through our account. So like whoever is paying the small business will remit the payment to RCA, then we remit the remainder to that company. So we're never having to chase the profit or the revenue from the company. We're getting paid directly. And that's a government FAR compliant procedure that we follow, which is why our rates are going to be more affordable, which is why we have no liens, no covenants, no personal guarantee, and it's non-recourse. So it's not a loan. So it's not such an in-depth underwriting. And because of that, that allows a smooth process to be able to work with a bank or other entities because we're not requiring such a high level on the cap stack. And that assignment is just assigning us the contract through the FAR. So the contracting officer now knows that we're involved. And I believe we're the only finance company that's a non-bank that performs assignments. Any other asset-based lending groups would just loan against your asset. We're actually going to assign your assets to us and finance them through what the government lays out. So I would say that's our biggest deferring factor because it gives them the confidence that we're not doing anything behind the government FAR compliant. Like we're following exactly what the government lays out for us to do. So that gives us confidence and the small business owner confidence as well.
Yeah. Do you ever encounter issues with the assignment of claims where like a contracting officer sees that? I thought I was going to make you laugh on that. Where a contracting officer sees it and goes, yeah, I don't know that we want to do this. Or like, I mean, there's some common challenges you see on that side.
Michael must have been in some of our team meetings recently. You know, because I think it's funny because you do. I mean, every contract officer knows about the assignment, but I will say sometimes this newer wave of contract officers that come into the marketplace, maybe that's more traditional. They say, oh, don't worry about it. So they have some cause to pause there. But as you think about it, as a contracting officer, that is the most like small business friendly tool that you would want to see. That means you know that this small business is serious about their growth. They're wanting to do an assignment to follow the instructions, and that's going to enable them to grow. Because of that, we can now grow with the company. Like, we assign us one contract, we're going to fund. Hey, we want another one. Can you guys fund this one? So the assignment of claims just ensures security across all platforms. Mm-hmm. It's a very good risk mitigator. But of course, you know, you got to sign a couple of documents there. So maybe like, oh, what is this? We're not aware of it. But most contracting officers that we've worked with, like, they are aware and they're aware that we do that. They're happy that we do that.
Just so that people are listening can understand the process, when does that come in during the contract phase? During negotiation? Yep. Explain that. When do you pull that out and say, hey, Mr. Contracting Officer, can you do that? Like, where does it happen in the timeline?
And let me add a part two to that question after you answer that. You know, when is the best time for people to reach out to you and start to know you and build a relationship with you in addition to that?
Both are great questions, and Chris alluded to it earlier. The earlier, the better. I'm telling Chris, if we could have a whole segment of stories.
So, like, as soon as they get off of this call, call Isaac.
We could have some whole other segment of how it's been some last-second fires you have to put out sometimes when people come running to you that they need to cover payroll in the next week, and now we're having fun scrambling. But, yeah, the earlier, the better, you know, because if you know, like, say you're bidding, hey, Isaac, we're bidding for this contract. Yeah. Great. Let's get you a letter.
Yeah.
Now if you guys are in it, when are you going to hear back from them? Let's get you guys on board now, because we can work all the way up to getting you guys on board with us and then just sit there, just sit on the application, sit on the closing documents until that contract lands and then you really need us. But we can get all the paperwork out of the way now, because we know that if this contract lands, we need to be ready to rock and roll with them. So I would, to answer your question, Michael, that would be the last step of bringing someone on board. Like, we give them a term sheet, they fill out our online application, and then we say, great, you're now one of our customers. Here's our assignment of claims documents we want you to now send to your contracting officer. Here's the verbiage. And as soon as they sign off on it, we are now able to fund this contract you want us to fund. Yeah. So that's the last step. And it takes, you know, 2 to 3 days to send it over. And as soon as they send the documents back to us, we now have the green light to start funding that contract. Yeah.
Do you only see this typically on brand new contracts? Or what if I'm in growth mode and I'm in year 3 of a 5-year contract and I'm like, man, we really want to grow. Yep. Can we still use the process midway through a contract to do that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it makes sense, of course, before the contract. But sometimes they're noticing there is a cash flow issue and they want to grow at an even faster rate than before. And then we can just come in and, you know, perform the assignment of the contract right in the middle of it. And then once we're assigned, we start funding. So there's a lot of different scenarios. And that's how me and Krista at Bank America has worked a lot, because here's a fun one. So there could be a client that is a client of Bank of America and a client of RCA. I know, shocker, guys. Yep. But they could have a line of credit with Bank of America, but then maybe they win a new contract, like you said, Michael, or, you know, they just got dropped more work and Bank of America can't quite get to that amount as soon as they would like. So then we could come in and fund that one separate contract that Bank of America isn't providing a line of credit for. So we're working together to get the whole spectrum there for you. There could be $1 million line of credit with Bank of America, then $1 million for a separate contract with RCA, but we're both providing funding because, you know, we just do a lien release and just fund that one contract with Bank of America. So the answer to the question, you can bring us in and plug us in at the beginning, middle, and or the next contract, and that just kind of gives them the confidence they need to go forward and not feel like they're going to default on it anytime soon.
I will say what I do a lot of times is that, you know, because we also pursue contracts and grants, and I'll have the relationships out there with the banker, with the accounting person, and things that I don't understand, because I don't know everything, especially like the accounting stuff can get very complex, legal, and all of these different things. So when I know these people and they're part of my network, I call them my mastermind alliance. And so when I look at opportunities, I'm thinking about, okay, what is it that I might need or I don't know? And so I'll say to my mastermind alliance, hey guys, I'm going to need some help here. Can you take a look at this and let me know how you can support me? And then they will tell me, because sometimes you really don't know what you don't know to ask, right? Yeah. And it's the thing sometimes that you don't see that can really hurt you the most. So I'd like to segue into our Q&A. I know we had a lot of questions. Really quickly, if somebody wanted to reach out to you guys, how might they get in touch with you?
The best way is just shoot me an email, and that's a very easy way to reach out to me. It's krista.williams@bofa.com. And just, you know, provide some of your insights, provide some of that background information. We can easily set up a call and chat and just talk through the opportunities. I'm also on LinkedIn, so you can check me out there. But easiest way is definitely through email.
Okay.
Honestly, I think that's the key. When you find a banker or, you know, a finance firm that is someone personable that actually believes in what you're doing and willing to talk to you, like if we're not a good solution, we're not going to lie to you. Like Chris is not going to lie to you. And I think sometimes you can't say that all across the board from other finance firms. You know, sometimes they're just going to try to say yes until they can't anymore. But just talking to people in this industry and learning like how, you know, okay, great. Carol knows Isaac, who knows Chris, Michael, like it's great just to know all of these players because we could probably find a solution within this four. Like this is a pretty good group right here. I'd be shocked if we couldn't find a solution for you.
Right.
Four, but that's what it's all about. I love going to conferences, meeting people in person, like Kristen, Michael, and Carol. It's great because that helps us have other solutions in our tool belt. So please reach out.
Absolutely. I'd like to go ahead and conclude the show, but for those of you guys who are on live with us, and I know you put some great questions in there, I'll hang out and Isaac will hang out with me for a little bit. We'll kind of see if we can get through as many as we can. But I wanted to just thank you, Krista, and thank you, Michael, of course, again, for being with us. And so that will conclude the official and formal part of our show. And now we'll segue into our Q&A period. So thank you guys, and we'll hope to see you again soon. One of the things I wanted to say before you guys hop off is we do have some plans to bring out some great access to capital education on the Govology platform later in the year. So I'll definitely be hitting you up to see if you can, you're interested in doing some training or know some folks that want to do some training to kind of have something a little bit more formalized that we could actually point people to when they need to understand that. One more thing. Govology Nation. I mentioned this at the housekeeping, but I want to also invite you, Krista and Isaac, into our LinkedIn community, because what I'd like to do, if you guys come up with a question that it didn't get answered here, please go to Govology Nation, our LinkedIn group, and post that question. The best way to get that is to go to www.govology.com/nation. It's a little hyperlink that's going to bring you into our LinkedIn group. And go ahead and ask your questions there. We'll see it, and we'll make sure that Chris or Isaac also, you know, once you guys get into the group, we'll make sure we can, like, say, hey, can you get an answer for this person?
Absolutely.
That sounds great. And I'm loving these names, man. Govology Nation is, that's tough to beat.
Thanks.
I'm going to steal the Mastermind Alliance. I'm
going to put that on my LinkedIn.
Well, I stole that from Napoleon Hill.
Somewhere else.
Yeah.
Carol, if I could, I'd love to give a final thought here. Maybe it makes it into the podcast. Maybe it doesn't. But since several clients to Krista, I've heard nothing but good things. People rave about it. She's helped a lot of our clients. I haven't sent anybody to Isaac yet because I really just met him, but I know I'm going to be sending people his direction. But as far as like a final tip for people, understand that if both of these people on the line here today say no or you're not ready, take that to heart. Don't try to go some third, fourth party weird route that's just going to get you in trouble. It's going to take away a lot of money. Like if they say no, I know them well enough after just the few conversations to say they will tell you, look, go back and do these three things, four things, and then you'll be ready in a professional manner to move forward with the lending or financing you need. Don't try to force it. It's so hard when I see small business owners trying to force weird and creative lending solutions that gets you in a lot of trouble. You don't need cousin Vinny looking over your shoulder for your books or anything.
Right?
Yeah, you don't need any of that kind of stuff. If they say no, it's because you're not ready. It's not because they don't want to give you money. It's not it's because you're not ready. So go get ready, do the things they tell you to do, and then come back and do it the right way, not the fast way. Because I guarantee you, you will not be happy if you do it the fast, creative funding solution way, whether it's friends and family or whatever it is. You don't want anybody looking over your shoulder. You want to do it the correct way. And they're telling you that for a reason. So just take that to heart. And I'll leave it with that.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you, Krista.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, everybody. See you later. Thank you.
Okay, for you guys that are hanging out with us for the Q&A, and thanks for staying on, Isaac.
Yeah, of course.
I've got a question, and I don't know how much you guys actually deal with this on what you do, because like the funding is kind of guaranteed if you got the contract. But
right.
One person asked a question, which I was also thinking about, and it's something that I talked about last year as we saw the requirement for contractors to have to get a Dun & Bradstreet profile set up in order to put that number in and do their SAM registration. And there was some things I was saying about that is that just because Dun & Bradstreet has gone away from you having to set up a number with them to register that in government contracting, it will still impact you in ways, because I know that your DUNS rating is something that creditors look at, banks look at, people that do construction bonding looks at, and actually even government agencies look at. And I think a lot of people don't know that, but you know, back when I was a contracting officer, we subscribed to Dun & Bradstreet, and before I awarded a construction contract, I was required to do due diligence, and I would pull up this supplier qualifier report, and it would show what is the risk of that company. So when it comes to that in the line of what you do, do you guys like take a look at anything like credit worthiness or anything like that when you make the loan, or is it kind of pretty much it doesn't really matter?
That's such a great question. And to Carol's point, yes, all those things are very important. We can help you build, you know, those credits up in those areas, which is why, you know, I'm always stressing that we're a really great option for someone that is unsure about any of those like credit ratings that they have, but they are willing to take that step forward to go after some government contracts anyway, because our underwriting isn't as personal intensive or business credit intensive. Like, we can put that to the side, at least for now, and say, hey, we can focus on growing your business. And that's going to, by nature, grow those scores as well. And because for us, like, we're not having to underwrite your personal credit as much and underwriting the business credit, because you could be a startup. You could have no past performance or no much history that you can show for, but you have the one contract that you're either going after or that you just won. So you're very enthusiastic about that, and we can underwrite that and get the ground running from there. I'm sorry, you going to say something?
No, I just kind of thought of a great question that probably should be asked. When I was talking about when you're looking at the contract and the solicitation and preparing and understanding all of the costs that's going to be taken involved, and we were talking about, hey, what's the right time to reach out to you? Right. You know, if you think that you're going to need factoring or the financing that you guys do under this contract, that would also be another great time to contact a person like Isaac, because you could say, what is your rates? And, you know, I don't know how that works, if it's the same for everybody or if you want to disclose here, but what is the rate? So that way, when you know your rate on the money that you are taking into account, you can 100%. Build that into your contract.
100%. That is a very proactive approach, Carol. I've had people ask me that before, because if you do know the rates going into it, you could more likely factor that into your pricing.
Yeah, so the government will pay for it.
No, exactly.
You know, instead of if you don't have it built in, right, at the beginning, then it comes out of your profit.
Right. No, 100%.
So that's a critical like point to understand. Yeah.
Those are one of the factors that can really get you ahead of the curve. If you think about just how the game works, you know, how the RFPs are coming out, what you can get away with in the pricing. And, you know, for us, we're very inexpensive because of what we provide. Like, we're probably going to be around the 1.5% on our rate. So that's definitely something that you could factor in. Like, okay, let's factor in this 1% that we'll get, that we're going to get the RCA and get financing. Yeah. So it's like, all right, we'll factor that in. So now we're in a really good position and still keeping your pricing competitive, but also ensuring that you have financing, because you could have the most competitive pricing in the world, but if you don't have the financing to back it up, you're not going to get selected for that bid. Yeah. So it's kind of a twofold thing there when you're going with the pricing.
What we were just talking about, man, I think that that's how you should position yourself to people, to think of you guys as a teaming partner, because when you going into these contracts, you're looking at your teaming partners. And typically, if you have a teaming partner, there's a cost to the teaming partner to support you. Yes. So if you've got the cost built in from the beginning, you don't have to pay on the backside out of profit. But what a lot of times happens, what we talked about at the beginning of the show, it's an afterthought. And when it's an afterthought, then it comes out of your profit.
It's such a good point, man. A lot of problems can be solved earlier if you try to address them. So it's so good.
By the way, there was a comment here in the chat. Somebody said, I can personally vouch for Isaac, stand-up professional. Nice little plug. Wait,
oh, I missed that. Really?
Yes.
Ahmad? Ahmad, I appreciate that, man. Now, see, it's a small world. I'm telling you, man. It's a very small world. So I really appreciate people that have utilized RCA in the past or come across us. And, you know, we're really big about treating people right and, you know, just making a big impact. So thank you guys so much for some of these direct messages that I'm getting right now. And I look forward to meeting a lot of you guys and helping out Govology Nation, man. I think I got to be a part of this nation, girl.
Absolutely, man. We're going to be having some chats, you and I, but.
Yeah.
A few more questions are in the queue. So will you finance state contracts? Will the federal contracts? Will you work with nonprofits with federal construction grants?
Yeah.
That's a two-part really good question.
Yes, very good question. So, yes, we will finance state contracts. Now, don't want to offend any states here, but there are, you look at the state credit, and let's just say there's a couple states that don't have a great credit as a whole.
Oh, okay.
I'll let you guys take a guess at some, but there's like two or three that, yes, we could finance the state contract, of course, but we do pull the credit of the state itself and how good they are at paying their customers for state contracts. And, you know, some aren't as great as others, but as long as it's a net 60 or below payment terms, it's a state contract. That's very easy for us to find. Of course, like, you want to look at it if it's post net 60 in the payment terms, but we have a lot of customers that are state contract holders. Now, for the second question, will you work with nonprofits? We do work with nonprofits as a whole, but not in the construction world. That's the one bucket we can't finance, guys. So I'm sorry for any construction people on the call, Carol, but that is a bonding is what prohibits us from being able to fund government construction contracts, just regular construction contracts, because if it's bonded, that puts a lien on your assets. So it forms a wall prohibiting anybody else to come in and finance your government AR. So the bond, it kicks us out of the picture. Now, back to the industry partners subject that we were talking about, we do have partners that specialize in construction financing. So if you ever have someone, Carol, or anyone on this call that or is in construction and like you're just looking for a trusted partner that can help you with the bonding and help you with the financing, since construction is a little different, more than happy to be that bridge to introduce you to some of our folks that perform in that entity. Because, you know, since we can't do it, we at least want to find someone that specializes in government contract financing or just general contract financing or construction financing for us. So RCA wouldn't be able to, the construction side, but more than happy to direct.
Absolutely. Those connecting points. Somebody was asking a question about which proposal writing company we were referring to. And I don't know if that was with regards to what Krista said about the presentation she was doing or the one I use. We use, just hit me up if you guys want the name of a couple of companies. You know, I like to give people a couple of options, but you know, we've got a company that we use. And we also, by the way, have a directory, which Isaac, I'd like to get you guys in. We're working on revamping what we call our Govology Connect directory. And it's a directory of our trusted resource partners. We don't take any referral fees because I want people to feel confident that if we're making a referral out to somebody, it's not because we're getting a commission, but it's because we believe in the company. So if you go to the Govology website and look under resources and then trusted experts, that's where you're going to find our directory. As I mentioned, we're revamping that, Isaac, and we'll build in a capital access piece and we'll get you in there.
No, and we would love to Sam and add you guys as well, just as trusted resources with Govology, because really like what you guys are doing here. Looking forward for this year to collaborating and seeing how we can help educate, you know, more this year. This has been great. Really enjoy this.
Yeah. All right. Here's another question. Can you pass along government financing fees and interest or suggestions of building these expenses into government budget proposal?
Yeah, I guess we kind of alluded to that earlier. Yes,
that's
I
mean, kind of like an accounting type of question, sounds like.
Yeah, but we alluded to that earlier when it comes to proposal, right? If you know the fees up front, you know, there is ways that you can factor those into your pricing models. It's really great to talk to, like, you know, some pricing experts as well in that regard and CPAs, because if, say, it's like a cost-plus contract, there is ways, since you're able to invoice for more, that you can since we are a non-interest expense. Yeah. I'm not a CPA, but because we're a non-interest expense, there is ways to get creative of how you can utilize RCA's financing. And since it's not a loan, you kind of divvy it up in the balance sheet to become a lot more cleaner and, you know, not cost anything because you're able to reimburse for it. So there's cost plus contracts is something that we're pushing for as well because you can get creative. But then even on an FFP or IDIQ, like there's ways just to incorporate that in the pricing model. Yeah. So you're already knowing that you're not going to take as much as a margin deficit as you would prior. But yeah, more than happy to talk about whoever asked that question because there's a lot of avenues to look at that, especially in a tightening credit market that we're in now.
You mentioned a couple of things right there. FFP, firm fixed price contract versus cost contracts. And then, you know, so this is another important thing where the education comes in. And this is the theme, I think, in this and in a lot of things. It's just the education and the relationships is going to be really so key for you guys to just really get into this market, win, sustain your contracts, get out of those without having any issues. So definitely continue building those relationships and building your education at Gavology and at other places as much as you can. There was a question for Bank of America. I would say, you know, if you can just post that to Gavology Nation if you want to get that one answered from Bank of America or reach out to Krista directly. Let's see. Can you please discuss options where a financially viable prime agrees to float a small sub for a short period of time? Is that even a possible funding source? And actually, this was pretty relevant to a situation that I actually dealt with the company that I was talking about at the beginning, who got a contract with a prime and then, you know, didn't have the game plan in place for the financing. Right. And that was part of how she was trying to manage that. She was approaching the prime, you know, asking if they could actually, you know, assist her in basically maybe making a payment a little bit early maybe than they normally would because, you know, when you get into these situations and these contracts and there's sometimes where you can go and then say, look, here's where we are. You know, we want to, you know, be successful. We want to, you know, this is our first time around. We're really learning a lot here. And a lot of times you can certainly ask for folks to either give you some extended terms or maybe kind of pay you a little bit earlier or maybe even kind of pay you up a little bit in advance. I mean, it's all possible, but it's not possible if you don't ask. And so that's what my best advice would be. Ask, you know, and the better your relationships are with them, the more likely you're going to have that ability to get that request granted.
I couldn't agree more with Carol. There's no shame, everyone, in like subcontract. I think sometimes some people are pushing so much to get that first prime award, but you can build a really strong infrastructure if you partner with some of these primes, partner with some of these organizations that they're looking for subcontractors. So there is a need there. The government's pushing more than they've ever pushed before to make sure small businesses are getting placed in these subcontractor roles and having opportunities to grow. Now, a big key term you have to know is pay when pay for most of these contracts. Like the prime contractor, they will say, hey, we will pay you when we get paid. So the prime contractor, they're waiting to get paid. So then when they get paid, that's when they can pay you. So sometimes they're simply waiting for their payment. So because that's such a great point, Carol. So our financing is a great bridge to help subcontractors get paid on time. And not only that, build a stronger rapport with their primes. Because if you think, if you were a subcontractor, you're able to tell the prime, hey, we have the financing in place that we don't have to worry about when you get paid. Because if we use RCA, as soon as we invoice you, we can at least get an advance on that invoice. So we don't have to wait for you to pay you. RCA is going to help us bridge the gap from where we invoice to payment. And we're able to take on more work because of that. You're probably going to become one of the prime's best friends because, okay, I like the subcontractor. Yeah. They have financing in place. They're able to support the FTEs we need. And they're not complaining every time that we're taking time to get paid and then paying them because sometimes it's going to could be 30, could be 45 based upon when the prime gets paid. So, you know, a lot of our clients are subcontractors because they're working to build that up and our financing helps them get to that next point of growth because they don't have to wait every time to receive the payment from their prime. They can utilize us to get the advance on the invoice.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. Hey, I think that's all the questions that we've got. So the last thing I was just going to mention about that is that what you said with the paid when paid thing and everything, I mean, it's so relevant. Yeah. I mean, you'll see that a lot. You'll see payment
right,
terms.
Right, right.
And yeah. What I will say is this, like usually if you're a subcontractor, you're going to get a standard boilerplate contract that's basically going to set forth payment terms, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you're a small business, you probably don't have a lot of negotiating power, and I wouldn't make it a habit of saying to the prime, like, hey, let's negotiate on this. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
they'll be like,
no.
What I was referring to is that if you're in a bind, you know, you're starting to try to find those, like, you know, solutions, like, how can we make this work? And sometimes if you find yourself in that position, you might be able to work with your prime to figure out something. But again, call Isaac, try to figure out what you can do. And this is what I said to this person that we were dealing with and trying to help her out. I'm like, look, at this point, just do what you've got to do to basically get through your contract, have great performance, and let's just get out of this thing, regardless of if you really make a big profit on this or not. Let's close out strong on this so that contract, you'll know and you'll learn and you'll be better prepared for next time. But we don't want to basically do anything where we're going to default and now we have a bad relationship and never get invited back to be a contractor, either for, you know, that government or that prime.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. Totally agree. Sometimes you got to take the wins, take what you can, build those relationships and build the past performance. You know, like, okay, what are you able to accomplish? And that's going to help out in the long run. So not much to add there, but 100% just take the wins that you can get in the interim time.
Absolutely. Well, Isaac, hey, thank you so much for the extra time today that you stayed on to answer all of the questions. And
this is great.
You know, definitely jump into Govology Nation and join us. And I'm glad to have met you. And it's always great to have another point of contact that I can send folks out to. So I'll be catching up with you soon. So until then, we'll see you again.
No, appreciate it. Thank you guys so much. Carol, thanks for the invite. This was a lot of fun and a great way to kickstart the year. Like, looking forward to partnering more with Govology in the future. Please feel free to reach out. Looking forward to talk to a lot of you guys. Thanks, Carol.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Man.